Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, we honor a late Oakland artist who produced a documentary about the history of Sigma Gamma Rho sorority, and we salute the late disability activist Alice Wong. Then, singer Deanna Gameros talks about giving people hope through her new album, and actor Rainn Wilson from The Office is coming to Fan Expo San Francisco. Today's show is about artists who make a difference and make us smile. That's all coming up. Stay with us.
My days are great. My nights are good. Things have gotten better, just like you said they would.
Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden. That song you hear is All I Need by the late Bay Area artist Tamika Nicole Williams Clark. Tamika was originally from Oakland, and she was my sorority sister. Oh, I miss her so much. She served as Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority International Historian, and in that role, she was the lead producer of the sorority's documentary, Greater Than Ourselves, The Legacy of Sigma Gamma Rho. And you can stream it on Apple Plus. This month marks the third anniversary of Tamika's passing and the 103rd anniversary of the sorority. Joining me to talk about the film is Michelle Aldridge. She is the former Western Region Director of Sigma Gamma Rho, and she was featured in the documentary. Hey, Michelle, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. You know, it's bittersweet. I miss Tamika. I know you do, too. She touched so many people, but it was nice to hear her singing and to hear her voice. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And exactly three days will be the exact anniversary. Yeah. Passing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny, the last time I saw her was near the Grand Lake Theater. And it was interesting because this month I went to the Grand Lake Theater. You hosted an event with other sores to screen the documentary Greater Than Ourselves. So it felt like a full circle. What drew you to Sigma Gamma Rho sorority? Let's just go back to the beginning. Let's go back to Lil Michelle on campus.
And that's really what it was. I'm an alumni of San Jose State University. Go Spartans.
Go Spartans.
I was with a friend of mine, and she said, oh, go to this information meeting with me on campus. And I said, no. And she just said, come on, just go with me. You don't have to join, nothing like that. And then I walked into the room, and I saw people that I had seen on campus that I'd connected with, whether it was in classes, in the gym, whatever the case may be. And they were all members. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, these people are so nice. And I hear, you know, and I see them doing service. But it just really was like, wow, okay, let me stay here and let me listen and see what's going on. And pretty much the rest was history after that. It was home for me.
And how long have you been a member?
Oh, let's see. 35 years.
Wow.
I joined when I was 5. That's the story we were going to tell people, okay?
Yeah. I didn't know members at 5, but okay. Yeah. I was like, well, shout out if the math is math, but we'll go with that. You're the former Western Region Director. We'll go with that.
It's the new math. It's okay.
Well, you know, I was so surprised and happy to see you and Tamika on screen together. And you both were talking about being babies, practically freshmen, when you joined the sorority. And Tamika joined the sorority when she was a student at Sacramento State. So let's play a clip of that from the documentary.
I joined when I was 18 years old, so I was a girl, I like to say. I joke sometimes to say I was a rower. I was not. I was a full member.
For her and I to sit here, you know, like we said, join at 18, 19 years old, and now we're in a documentary. I was thinking about this, and I didn't want to start tearing up, like, dude, we're in a documentary for 100 years.
That was so just great to see on screen. How did Tamika contribute to the sorority as a sister and someone who served? I don't know if Tamika did not ever meet across a person and didn't make a friend with them, because so many people knew her. So many people.
So many. And you know what? During the COVID year, she even made more friends, because this is, you know, COVID had us inside and on social media all day, every day. So she was meeting friends all over the place. We would go to, when we were able to go back out, we'd go somewhere and they knew who she was. But you know what? She, as you had said, she was our region historian at one point, and then she moved into, which covered the West Coast, but then she moved into our international historian. Mm-hmm. And again, tying it back to COVID, she did things during that time where most people would have said, okay, we're inside, there's nothing to be done. Right. She was able to bring the organization together to have us focus on, you know, our roots, to really understand our history of why we were established, why we, you know, why these young women, our founders, came together, and really got us to hone in on understanding our legacy, our roots, because with that, it was a matter of, you know what, we need to know where we've been, right, to know, you know, where we are and where we're going. So she pushed boundaries in a positive way, meaning she didn't get boxed into doing things how we always did them, mm-hmm, and encouraged people to do things that made sense and made impact. So she was really pivotal for this organization.
And she, you know, she loved history. I think she served as historian, if I recall when I interviewed her. She served as a historian pretty much in every chapter she was in, on every level of membership for herself. And we actually, a few weeks before, again, when I said last time I saw her was near Grand Lake Theater, and I had interviewed her, and we talked about the history of the sorority, which is beautifully displayed in the film. Again, 7 Black school teachers in Indianapolis, Indiana, founded the sorority in 1922 at Butler University. What makes our history so unique compared to the other historically Black sororities that are part of the National Panhellenic Council?
Well, I will say that, you know, everybody has an amazing story. And in the end, we all want to focus on our community, on women, on youth, on service. I think what sets us apart just from the onset is we're the only one that wasn't founded at a historically Black college. We were founded at Butler University in Indianapolis, Indiana. And, you know, first of all, people didn't want necessarily people who look like us going to school to get an education. Right. And then our founders had to do that. And on a daily basis, they walked past the house of the Grand Wizard of the KKK.
Right, who was there.
So, you know, there were already, you know, there were a lot of challenges for them to do this, and being in a place where there wasn't a lot of people that looked like them. So that's, you know, one thing. We were founded by educators. Again, all organizations are supportive of education. However, that was the rationale for us to even come together in the first place.
And, you know, I went to a predominantly white institution, and I also had the fortunate opportunity to study at Spelman College as well. I spent a semester there on exchange program, and it's very much different. You know, it's very, even then, this was like in the early 2000s, even then. And so, and not to say that the women at the other, you know, the founders from the other sororities didn't have their struggles, because this is being a Black woman in early 1900s, right? I can only imagine. But there is a difference, you know, when it's just you and you don't see yourself reflected that much. I think in the documentary it was mentioned that at that time when they were attending school, I think Butler only let in like 10 Black students at a time. And you mentioned about the Grand Wizard of the Klan being there, living in the neighborhood where Butler University initially was located, in an area called Irvington. And at that time, Indiana had one of the highest concentration of Klansmen. I think it was like 30% of white men were members of the Klan. And so Indiana was called Klandiana. Indiana was called Klandiana. And so I want to play a clip from the film, since we're talking about that, where the former international sorority president, Rashida Liberty, was speaking with undergraduate members of the sorority. And they're in Indiana in front of the property where D.C. Stevenson, who was the Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, lived. Let's play that clip.
Right here is the home of former Grand Wizard of the KKK. Right down the road is where our founders were actually being educated. So it is quite interesting.
I can't imagine them being like my age and having to walk past this house and like knowing who lives there. That's a terrifying experience.
And it said that Grand Wizard put pillars out in front of the home to make it feel like a plantation. That tells you the mindset. Mm-hmm. So our founders were resilient.
Strong yes. women.
Strong women.
Very persevering.
Very strong.
And also, too, when I interviewed Tammy, because she talked about that, you know, our founders were educators, and that was, for, you know, a time when, and still today, but that's a respectful profession. And, you know, for Black women to go into is to be educators. Hearing that clip and just, you know, we're looking back at the history. What does that say about our founders today, especially too in light of just the state of society today right now?
I think, you know, just our founders or even this documentary, I think what people want or should understand is that this is not just about a Sigma history, and those women, our founders, didn't set out to create Sigma history, but this is a part of history for women, for the Black community, history for America, just history in general. These are things that happened. These are things that they went through. And as said, you know, they were resilient. They continued to thrive. And I know they didn't set out, you know, in 1922 to say, I'm going to start an organization that's going to be around for 103 years. Right. You know, we continue to move forward with that. And one of the things too, especially about this movie that really appealed to me was, you know, we understand that racism runs deep, you know, whether we feel it does or not, it's still here. Right. Some of us, you know, feel it in the boardroom. You know, the good news is that we do get to get in the boardrooms. The bad news is we're still not in the boardrooms the way that we really can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and you know, they made a door for themselves, you know, because they couldn't join white sororities. Yeah. Yeah. So,
yes.
So they couldn't be at the board. They couldn't be in the boardroom. They made their own room.
Yes.
That's what you got to do. If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with my sorority sister, Michelle Aldridge. Michelle is the former Western Region Director of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority. She's in the documentary Greater Than Ourselves, The Legacy of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated. And the film goes in depth into the sorority's history and its first 100 years. And you can watch it on Apple Plus. You know, Michelle, I'm thinking so many extraordinary women come out of Sigma Gamma Rho. Most recently, Spinderella from Salt and Pepper just made history, becoming the first female DJ to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The mayor of Oakland, Barbara Lee, is a member of Sigma Gamma Rho sorority. Hattie McDaniel, the first African-American to win an Oscar. I can go on with the list. Beverly Jenkins, romance author. I love Beverly Jenkins. I'm a fan of some of the sorors in the sorority, you know. and just all the things. You do great work, too, in the community as well. And I'm so happy this is all highlighted in the film. What did it mean for you to be part of this film?
You know, at the time while working on it, it was something that I felt, it just needed to be done, because they said, we're going to have a documentary. And I said, okay, you know, and Tim was like, here, I need you to do this. I need you to do that. Okay. But I think it wasn't until after, when it was revealed at our centennial celebration in Indianapolis, that's when it got real. And I will say surreal. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't think of it as, I'm being a part of history. The things that I'm doing and we are doing together are a part of history. And it is. And it means it's something for people to reference back to continue to move forward. And that's why I know I will have to say that Tamika pushed to continue to make everything, you know, just right. But yeah, for me, it's still probably sinking in, like, okay.
You're
part, wow,
you're in history. I mean, people are gonna, you know, And thank goodness she was able to be present and premiere the film. So I'm glad that she lived to see that, and she got her flowers. So I'm gonna wrap up with you, Michelle, in a minute. We have about a minute left. What do you hope that people get out of this film, that viewers get out of this film?
You know what? I think it, again, bringing it back to, it was more than just history of a sorority. It's understanding the power of that sorority and the people involved, the people at the time. We didn't do it all by ourselves. We had support of other, you know, Greek organizations, Black community organizations, and people who are wanting to help to continue to push the agenda forward and push progress. And I've had in my life, I've had blessings, and I feel that with those blessings, I've had the ability to, and I have the responsibility to pay it forward. So I think this is one of those things you watch to say that, hey, you know what, I can do things, you know, individually, but there is definitely strength in numbers to get things done. And that, again, responsibility to pay it forward.
Well, Michelle, thank you for being a part of telling this story. Thank you for all that you've done for the organization. And thank you for coming on to chat with me.
Thank you for having me.
That was Michelle Aldridge, former Western Region Director of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated. She's in the film Greater Than Ourselves, The Legacy of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated, which you can stream on Apple Plus. And coming up, we celebrate the late disability activist, Alice Wong. Stay with us. I'm fulfilled totally. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. Earlier in the show, I saluted the late singer and filmmaker Tamika Williams-Clark, and I want to pay homage to another Bay Area woman who touched many lives, disability rights activist and author Alice Wong. Alice passed away last Friday. She was 51. Her family said in a statement that she died at UC San Francisco Hospital from an infection. Alice did so much in her life that I don't have time to list it all. She was a recipient of the MacArthur Genius Award. President Obama appointed her to the National Council on Disability. In 2020, British Vogue featured her on their cover along with other activists. Alice was a cover girl. And Alice told me she liked wearing red lipstick and eating pie. So that's what we would talk about. And I'm actually wearing red lipstick today in her honor. And community was so important to her. You know, and the fact that she, doctors thought she would only live to be 18, and Alice lived to be 51. And I know community helped her, you know, live as long as she did. So I interviewed Alice in 2020 about the anthology that she edited titled Disability Visibility, which is also the name of her media brand. But her book features writers who give their take on living with disabilities. Alice lived with muscular dystrophy. And in this excerpt of our discussion, she talks about why she included pieces on being disabled and having joy in her anthology.
For me, this book is a snapshot of the disabled experience, as much for some people, in our current time period. You know, there are some very serious pieces, but there's a lot of beauty and joy as well. And I think we don't see enough joy. You know, I think one of the ways we do stay alive is finding joy in one another. Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me is what's helped me is the relationships I have with people, making time for myself, eating desserts. But yeah, we have to make space for joy, and we have to take pleasure in what we can, because there is joy in being disabled. I think that goes against almost every major kind of idea.
Yes, it does.
Or narrative or portrayal. If you actually talk to people who have these disabilities, it's like, I'm just living my life the best way I can, you know, just like everybody else. It's really the oppression and the low expectations people have of us that's really super, super toxic. And, you know, that's what needs to be dismantled.
That was an excerpt from my interview with the late disability rights activist, Alice Wong. You can listen to the full interview on KALW's Cross Currents webpage. We'll have a link on our website. Alice Wong, wherever you are, may you rest in peace and love. Coming up, singer Deanna Gameros has a new album that shines light during bleak times. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Dart. The song you hear is by singer Diana Gameros, and it's called Tus Pasos 3, Flowers at Your Feet. Tus Pasos is Spanish for your steps. And can we hear a little bit more of that? Is that possible? Because it's so pretty. And this song is one of many beautiful songs from her new album, Volver a la Luz, or Return to the Light. The bilingual album is a beautiful blend of Mexican sounds, classical music, some jazz, and folk. Diana is having an album release party this Sunday, November 23rd, at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. And joining me to chat about this gorgeous album is Diana herself, Diana Gameros. Hello.
Janae, so nice to be back.
Yeah, so good to see you. I saw you at the beginning of this year at the Paramount Theater.
Yes,
so it's nice.
Another beautiful celebration.
Yes, another. Yeah. It was another beautiful celebration for the Martin Luther King event. What is that called? And I should remember because I hosted something affiliated with it. But my mind has escaped me because I'm at that
Mine too. But it was just beautiful. I just remember the joy I felt of seeing so many people.
Yes, and yes. So and it was a salute to Aretha Franklin. It's so good to see you and we're getting towards the end of the year, so to kind of go towards the end of the year with you. Diana, you have such a beautiful voice. I remember In the Name of Love. I remember now. Hey, yes, it came back to me. Yes. That's what it was. Okay. So shout out to In the Name of Love too. But Diana, you have such a beautiful voice and you're also a great songwriter. And your album is called Volver a la Luz, which is Spanish for Return to the Light. Forgive my not so beautiful Spanish speaking. It doesn't sound as pretty as when you say it and sing it. Tell me, where did that title come from?
It's just a way for me to remember to go to that place that I believe we all come from and we go to, and just recognizing our own light. For me, I think I needed a reminder in these 2 years that this album has been conceiving or taking shape. And since I received that grant, the Gerbode grant, this was made thanks to that extremely generous grant from Gerbode and through the collaboration with the Women's Audio Mission. Ever since I got that grant, I mean, it's been a difficult time for me, but I think, one of the things that I kept reminding myself is to connect to that light, whether it is, you know, my inner fire, my inner glow, or connecting to the light of the people that came before me. And just sort of realizing that we all have that too, you know, and that in the way that we recognize our being with a capital letter being, and we recognize the light and humanity in one another, it's a way for me and hopefully for others to begin to shimmer again, to glow again, as we go through challenging times. It's, you know, challenging times. And I think, you know, like your previous interviewer said, like we deserve joy, and we can access that place of joy even amidst challenging situations.
And there's a nice write-up of you in Mission Local, and I will go into details because I know you've been through a lot. You kind of touched on it, some family illness, family loss, and you talk about, you know, the light that's helping you to get through. And I'm sure other people are experiencing, you know, some of the same things that that you're going through. How does music continue to just pull you through? Because there's nothing like a song when you're going through something that just speaks to your heart and just frees you, even if it's just for those 5 minutes of the song.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, life is an accumulation of moments here and there, of present moments or moments in which we can be truly in the now and accessing those moments of joy or of beauty, of awe, or of stillness. And so I think music, at least for me, it really brings me to that place of joy. And, you know, I really have to share this sort of quote, the Sojourner Truth. I just love it so much because it's kind of a, like a mantra for me. And she said, if we laugh and sing a little as we fight the good fight of freedom, it makes it all go easier. I will not allow my life's light to be determined by the darkness around me. So this is sort of like a mantra or a proclamation of, yes, we're going to shine.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if we recognize ourselves as light, then really what is darkness, right? Darkness is the absence. Darkness itself, it's nothing. It doesn't have power. So if we recognize ourselves as luminous beings, then as long as we are present and recognizing that fire within us, that light within us, then darkness dissipates. So, her quote really helps me get through the day.
Yeah, I think it's so important, right? And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this show, because in light of you and I did something similar, because I kind of changed the direction of this show. And I know you kind of changed the direction of your album as life was happening, as life was lifing. And I did the same thing with this show. And I was like, you know, I think people are going to need some hope, because right now the news headlines are really, really heavy. And I'm just thinking about your ancestors and my ancestors and the struggles they went through and how important it was to make some space for joy in similar times. And I want to go back to the album because it's so pretty. I was listening to it again today and I said, yeah, this is so good. Okay, so you have three tracks, and correct me if I pronounce them wrong. Is it Tus Pasos?
Yes, okay. Foot, which means to your footsteps.
Okay, your footsteps. And so there's three different ones. There's Tus Pasos, The House is on Fire. Tus Pasos, Leave Home Behind. Tus Pasos, Flowers at Your Feet. Mm. And I'm thinking of, you know, you're talking about these steps and these steps in life and this journey in life. How are they all connected?
Well, this is sort of, this is actually a tribute that I make to people who move, because I am an immigrant myself, and I am touched, and I have been absolutely touched by the movements of people who are exercising their right to leave situations of harm or of hardship or mainly just, you know, answering to their heart's desire or to their heart's call to leave home for whatever reason. It's an homage to people that move and that have to leave home. I was inspired specifically by the migrant caravans happening a few years ago. And it is my desire that people understand the roots of migration and that we don't just, sort of have a critique of and trying to be opinionated about why people are here and or like, you know, try to determine whether somebody deserves to get a legal status or not. And like, for me, it's to go to the roots. And so this is a way to honor, you know, Tus Pasos, the first movement. It's called The House is on Fire, because a lot of the times, a lot of the countries from which these people were fleeing were countries that had been either invaded or foreign intervened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so metaphorically, their houses were being on fire, so they had to leave.
Right.
And then the second movement, it's honoring their actual footsteps. You know, when it's that moment of leaving your home, that it's a hard decision. People are not just, oh, yeah, let's go to the United States to see what happens. People do not want to leave their home.
Right.
So in this song, I'm honoring that moment in which a person says, I'm leaving home. I'm leaving everything I know behind, my language, my people, my roots, my community, my food, my culture, my music.
Yeah.
And then move.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And movement number three, Tus Pasos three, Flowers at Your Feet, is an invitation for us who get to be hosts of people that come to our shores that have traveled miles, sometimes by foot. In fact, the reason why I call it Tus Pasos, it's a literal footstep. You know, it's people were leaving their homes by foot, literally walking out of their homes, you know, and embarking on these journeys in these caravans. And so the third movement of this suite, you could say, it's called Flowers at Your Feet, because it's more of an invitation for us who get to be hosts to go beyond welcoming a migrant, welcoming somebody who has embarked on this dangerous, loving journey to better the life for them and their children, and say, we don't just welcome you. We celebrate you. We yes. celebrate your courage. And if anything, it is you who we want in this country, in this land, because the traits that you are carrying with you, that courage, that love, that bravery, that physical stamina. I mean, who does that? You know, who leaves home by foot and gets on a train and goes through a desert? I am from Ciudad Juarez, Janae, mm-hmm. and I got to see with my very own eyes as we were driving at a highway, people were walking. I got to see these migrants because I'm from a border town. So people, a lot of Venezuelans and Cubans in that moment, actually, it was that we got to see them along the road, walking with their sometimes one suitcase in one hand, one child on another. That is it, walking miles and miles. And so for me, this music is a way to honor them and to invite us to open our hearts and our minds, more specifically our minds, so that we know really what is behind a person yeah. that leaves home and arrives at our shores. It is my desire that we, the hosts, get to cultivate the most beautiful flowers. So all they have to do when they arrive at our shows is they just get to rest. We sing them a lullaby, or we throw them a party by the beach, and we put flowers at their feet.
And you're having a party. Because
I am, and I'm going to bring lots of flowers too for everybody.
And we have about a minute and a half, but I do want to remind people that you're having your album release party at the Brava Theater in San Francisco on Sunday, November 23rd. Your album is called Volver a la Luz, which is, again, the Spanish for Return to the Light. And real quick, your album is not available on streaming platforms at the moment.
It won't be.
Okay. Are you going to have...
Until probably next year, and probably very limited platform as streaming platforms.
Okay. So right now, at the moment, the only way people can get the album is through coming to your album release.
Yes. Okay. Come to the album release. I have my baby right here.
I can see it.
Physical copies are right here. Next year, I'm going to have vinyl. But this is going to be truly a celebration, a benediction, a ceremony, bringing community together. And just we're going to sing together. We're going to smell flowers together. We're going to do a procession. I mean, it's going to be full of magic and of beautiful collaborators too, musical collaborators. So I hope to see you there.
Deanna, it's always a pleasure. This went by too quick because I had a ton of other questions to ask you. But it went by too quick and I wanted to play more of your music.
But I also talk too much. I'm sorry.
But you're passionate about what you do. And aww. So I respect you for that. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, beautiful musician, beautiful music, beautiful songwriting. Thank you for putting your art out in the world. And it's good to see you. You got to come back.
Thank you, my dear. I will. You say the word, I'll be there.
Okay, all right. I've been chatting with singer Deanna Gameros. See her perform songs from her new album, Volver a la Luz, at the Brava Theater in San Francisco this Sunday, November 23rd. And next up, I chat with actor Rainn Wilson, and we talk about him meeting his fans in San Francisco next weekend. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. Bay Area geeks are going to come out in full force over Thanksgiving weekend. That's because Fan Expo San Francisco is returning to the Moscone Center on November 28th to the 30th. And there will be events related to comic books, gaming, horror, anime, sci-fi, etc. And of course, some major celebs will be there, including 3-time Emmy-nominated actor Rainn Wilson. Rainn had us cracking up for 9 seasons on The Office. He played the over-the-top, super competitive, nosy, no-filter-having, always-plotting-something-crazy Dwight Schrute. Rainn is also a New York Times bestselling author, host of the podcast Soul Boom, and he appeared on one of my favorite shows, Star Trek Discovery. And you can see him only on Saturday of the expo, so make sure you put that in your calendars. Only on Saturday he'll be there. But until then, he's going to chat with me right now. Rainn Wilson.
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good.
Hey,
how are
I love
you?
That intro.
I tried to be hyped because you were here. I said, I got to hype you up.
Oh, that was great. And I love the interview before. I'm going to definitely get Diana's album. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Oh, her work is so beautiful. So good to have you. you, because I know you are like, you are booked and busy. You're promoting your book. So I was so happy that you were able to make time.
I heard it was you. I'm here.
I was anytime. Like, Rain. I said, Rain, know me.
I'm here. I'm here for you always.
I'm glad you're so here. You're so here for me and you're here on the show. You have attended a number of cons over the years. I was watching some old videos of you. You know, not all celebrities like meeting their fans up close, but you do. So why? Why do you like meeting your fans up close?
You know, it really, I do a handful a year, 2, 3, 4 fan conventions a year. And it's the only time you get to really do a deep dive with the fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, us actors, you know, you film TV and movies and stuff like that. And you're definitely like people will come up in Starbucks and say, oh, I loved you on The Office or, you know, hi, how are you? But this is the chance of like people that are the super fans who feel like the show touched them, like they're fans of all of your work. And, you know, I love it. I love interacting, high-fiving, and it's great. What can I say?
Yeah. And we're not going to just talk about Dwight, because you also have done so many things. But definitely I would say that character is one of the funniest sitcom characters in my lifetime, in your lifetime, which, you know, speaks to your skills and talents as an actor, because I know comedy doesn't always come easy, you know, for other actors. And I've also seen you talk in the past about how fans have tattooed your face, on their bodies, which tells you how iconic the character is. Are people still doing that?
You have no idea.
Really?
You have no idea. Every fan convention, there's multiple Dwight tattoos. And honestly, Janae, they're getting bigger and bigger, like thigh length. Like,
really?
It's crazy. And I have to pretend that they're cool. I think it's a terrible idea, first of all. But then they show them, they're like, look at my tattoo. And it's my face, like, on their thigh. And I'm like, that's great.
That's commitment.
That is commitment. They're going to their grave with me etched into their skin.
I mean, you know, that's real love. Yeah,
that's real.
I'm excited to hear who from the Bay Area is going to show up with the Dwight. It's the Bay, so you know we're very creative.
Now we need to get radio disc jockeys tattooed on our bodies.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
No, we don't. Neither journalists, maybe producers. I'm looking at my producer. He's like, no.
E-minor?
Maybe Damien's like, board operators. Nah. One more question about Dwight. If I had to work with him, I know I would go crazy, which is funny because when I first started working at KLW, because we are a quirky bunch, we're very talented news team, award-winning news team, but we're a little quirky. There's a disco ball in the newsroom. My boss, he had a baby shoe glued to the wall when I first came here. And I said, you know, this is feel like the office journalism version. But what I like about the show is that, you know, the characters, even though they were all nutty, people are just like, that's just who he is, she is. You know, it's like they let people be themselves, even though there was also too some commotion. What did you like about, as far as the characteristics of Dwight? Because Dwight, like I said, would have drove me nuts. But is there something about his character that you do like?
Well, that's such a great question. And I sincerely mean that. First of all, I want to say that one of the things that fans really love about The Office now is like, I've had so many say, like, I'm a little offbeat, I'm a little bit weird, maybe I'm even a little on the spectrum, and you allowed me, and the crazy cast allowed me to feel okay being offbeat, mm-hmm. you know? And that feels really good to hear that. But the thing I love most about Dwight is that you can't quite peg him. You know, you can't, is he a nerd? He's kind of a nerd. Is he a bully? He's kind of a bully.
Yeah.
Is he a jerk? Yeah. Is he a sweet guy? Yeah. Is he a hard worker? Yeah. Is he a terrible worker? Yeah. I mean, he's so many contradictions.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's definitely all of those things. And and people love him. Like I said, I don't know if I could work with him, but I could definitely watch you playing him on television. And I also want to mention that, speaking of The Office, you're going to be on a Q&A panel with your co-star, Angela Kinsey. So that'll be fun for people to check out. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with actor Rain Wilson. He's going to be at Fan Expo San Francisco, along with other celebs and local artists. He'll be taking photos and signing autographs and signing copies of his book, The Expo is November 28th to November 30th. But Rain will only be there on Saturday. So just make sure.
Saturday.
Yeah, he will only be there on Saturday. So Rain,
you heard it here on Kyle FM. Kyle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Kyle. Feel free to use that audio clip.
I will.
This is Rain Wilson on behalf of Kyle FM.
Okay.
All right. I'm done.
We're all cracking up in the studio. Rain. I knew you were going to do this. Okay. And I love it. Okay.
Did I throw you off? No. I threw you off your game.
Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, no. I wanted you to bring the rain. I said, bring the rain. Okay. So we're in San Francisco and in the Star Trek universe. Starfleet headquarters is in San Francisco, and you appeared on one of my favorite shows, Star Trek Discovery, and you played fast-talking, dangerous con artist and villain Harry Mudd, who also hooked up with a whale, but we won't talk about that, which was crazy when I watched that short that you did. And actor Roger Charles Carmel played Harry Mudd in the original series, and so I was watching you on Discovery, and I was like, that guy looks familiar. And then when I realized it was you, I said, yep. Perfect casting. How was it for you to be in the Star Trek universe?
Oh, man, it was a dream come true. I'm not even kidding. I grew up watching Star Trek. I started at like 5 or 6 years old. It really opened my mind and blew my mind at the same time about what was possible and how the world worked and the possibilities for the human race. And in fact, my book, Soul Boom, Why We Need a Spiritual Revolution, I talk about the spirituality of Star Trek. And how, even though Roddenberry was an atheist, really it showed like if humanity can put its racism behind it and its divisions and wars and strife and be at peace with nature and at peace with technology, we can strive for great things. You know, we can boldly seek out new life and new civilizations. So I think there's a spiritual lesson to be learned from the Star Trek universe. But, you know, I got to fire a phaser. I got to sit in the captain's chair. I got to get beamed up. Like I was a kid in a candy store. It just couldn't have been a better experience.
Yeah, you were great. I hope they bring you back. I know there's one season left for Strange New Worlds and it's sci-fi. There's a universe they can play with time, but I really hope they bring you back to play that character.
Because
I really enjoyed watching you. You mentioned your book, Soul Boom Workbook, Spiritual Tools for Modern Living. Again, you've been out promoting it, so that's why I was so thankful that you were able to make time for me. Tell us briefly about the book, because I know you're going to be signing copies at Fan Expo.
Well, you know, I started this whole thing during COVID where people didn't know that I had a kind of a secret inner Oprah interest in spirituality. And I found that spiritual tools have been very helpful to me in my own mental health struggles. Mm-hmm. And I want to share that with the world in a fun, interesting, accessible way. So the book Soul Boom came out 2 years ago, and now it's a Soul Boom workbook, which is a creative workbook. It's like the artist's way. There's drawing and doodling and free writing and, you know, interacting with this book as it takes you on a journey through the soul and meditation and finding what's sacred and connecting with nature. And then out into the world, how do we make the world a better place with spiritual tools? So I'm really proud of it, and people are really enjoying digging into it. And yeah, I'll be signing some copies over there at Fan Expo.
Yeah, I've been hearing good things about it. You know, I used to work, I used to work for a nonprofit that did mental health advocacy. And I worked, it's nonprofit, so I had many jobs. But one of my jobs was to work in the spirituality department. We had an interfaith department. And from research, we found, looking at research from other organizations, they found that spirituality works for a lot of people who have mental health challenges, and it's very important for people's recovery or just maintaining their wellness. So that totally
absolutely
makes sense what you said. Yeah.
And there's a loneliness epidemic. There's a meaning crisis. There's a hope deficit going on. And spirituality can fill a lot of those holes and bring a lot of meaning and purpose and clarity and focus to folks' lives when they get aligned, you know, with the divine spirit.
And, you know, you talk about loneliness and something like this Fan Expo, you know, it brings people together too as well. I always say, Rain, that I always see my people, one, at a family reunion, two, at a sorority conference, and three, at a con. That's what I always say. Those are I was like, I'm around my people. I see my people at those three places. And, you know, it's just so much fun to cosplay and just to be around other people that are into, like, nerdy pop culture stuff too as well. And so I know, like, it does. I know for times I felt lonely, and when I've gone to things like this, it definitely makes me feel better. And I know we have a few more minutes. You know, you've been putting smiles on people's faces for a long time now. I can't believe The Office came out 20 years ago.
I know.
We were like 5 when that came out. You and I, something like that.
I was like 5.
Yeah, you were like, yeah, he was playing Dwight. But
I'm about to be 60 in January.
Can you believe it? Congratulations! Yes,
it's killing me.
That's a big deal. That's wow. What a blessing! And then you and your wife celebrate 30 years wedding.
Yeah.
Wow, big milestone. How you feel about turning the big 6-0?
I feel terrible about it. There's no other way to couch it. I mean, you can, you know, 40. You turn 40 and you're like, oh, it's so old. And 50, you're like, oh my god. And now 60, it's like, forget about it.
But
it's,
you're cool. No.
I don't know what to say. I'm very depressed about it, but I'm going to 60 is the new 27.
That's how you gotta look at it. That's how you gotta look at it. My dad says 60 was the new 59.
Wise man.
So yeah, again, you know, like I said, you've done so much in your career, and you're 59, you're still a young man. My grandmother's 91. She would say you're a baby, because she says that to us. And you do voice acting too. You have such a great voice. You play Gargamel in the Smurfs movie. You voice Lex Luthor. What do you like about doing animation? I mean, you're good at being animated on camera, but with your voice, what do you like about doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I love bringing a character to life using only your voice. You know, when you're acting in front of the camera, you've got facial expressions and you've got physical comedy and using your body and, you know, how you move and, you know, what you're feeling, and the camera can pick that up, or the stage on the theater can pick that up. But in voice acting, you just have one component.
Yeah.
And it requires a certain kind of focus, and it's great. I mean, listen, it's a dream. I'm this nerdy kid from suburban Seattle, and I get to have this great career, and including, you know, voice acting. I still do theater, you know, film and TV, podcast. You know, I'm the luckiest man alive, really. It's been a great ride, and I'm just lucky I got to make a career at it.
Yeah. And, you know, you've shared the screen with some really incredible people, and other celebrities, excuse me, that will be at Fan Expo include Danny Glover, Henry Winkler, Edward James Olmos, Gillian Anderson from The X-Files, John Boyega of Star Wars, who I can't wait to meet too, and a lot more. And you're famous, but do you ever or recently have you met another celebrity where you're like, oh, my God, that's so-and-so?
Yeah, I met two celebrities that blew my mind. I don't really get, I meet very large celebrities and I don't get thrown at all. I'll meet Julia Roberts and be like, oh, hi, nice to meet you.
Right.
I met Wallace Shawn from The Princess Bride, you know, the short little guy. Oh, wow.
Yes.
You know that guy? And he's also a playwright. And I used to read his plays back when I was in college. And I think he's a brilliant writer. And also the songwriter, Paul Williams, from like, he did like Bugsy Malone and a lot of like 70s hits. And he's this odd little guy. He also was an actor. And I was such a huge Paul Williams fan. This is how nerdy I am. It's very obscure, super nerds I nerd out at.
Oh, that's so cool. Nerds are always welcome here. We're a very nerdy show.
Nerds welcome.
Yeah, it's nothing like when you meet someone. Because I've met a lot of famous people too. And sometimes maybe people that are... Damien Reiner's throwing up the Live Long and Prosper sign. Sometimes people that may not be as well known, I'm like, oh, that's so and so. Like, especially with books, I love books. So when I see authors that I admire, yeah, I get excited. But you know, I'm professional about it. You said you were nerding. We got like 2 minutes. So did you ever go to cons back in the day?
I did one better than that. I went to science fiction conventions.
Ooh.
And because my dad wrote some science fiction novels when I was a kid. And this was pre-cons, like a couple people would dress up and there were definitely some Star Trek nerds there, but I went and entered, I played like Dungeons and Dragons. It was called Norwest Con in Seattle in the early 80s, like 1980, 81, 82. I was there, this old school cons, like before there were cons.
Yeah. And I know you never thought that one day somebody's going to tattoo their face, tattoo my face on their thigh.
Yeah. At a con. That's nuts.
That's when you know you've made it. Last question. We have a few seconds. Thanksgiving is coming up, and I know you are very much invested and believe in spirituality. What are you most thankful for?
Oh, what a beautiful question. You know, gratitude is a superpower, and it can turn our frowns upside down. Sorry for the cliche. And I'm so grateful for my family. And, you know, family is everything. And that doesn't have to be your biological family. It's the family you find. It's the family you adopt. It's the community that you build. And I'm super grateful for that this year.
Well, Rain, I'm grateful that you came on the show, and I'm grateful that I got a chance to chat with you. And congratulations on everything. And I know people are excited to see you next weekend. Thank you so much.
What a delight. Great talking with you. Thanks again for having me on Cow.
Anytime.
All right.
Come on back. Actor Rainn Wilson will be at Fan Expo San Francisco on Saturday, November 29th. But the expo is running the entire Thanksgiving weekend, and tickets are on sale now. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, board operator, Damian Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Just a reminder, I'm just thinking about my Sora Tamika, and I'm thinking about Alice Wong, and they really embodied being good to themselves and each other. So make sure you honor their legacy, all right, by doing that for yourself. Again, until then, we'll talk, or you'll hear me. Be good to yourself and each other.